Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Frank, Survivor Series is here. I don't know if you're counting down the days to watch it or counting down the days until this time of year is over, but either way, it's Sunday, and Adam Pearce removes Rey Mysterio from the Survivor Series Raw team at the last second after his loss to Bobby Lashley in the main event, adds Austin Theory instead. I think there's quite a bit to digest around just Survivor Series in general, championship versus championship stuff. But we'll start here with the Raw Survivor Series match build on the men's side of things. What do you make of this? I mean, is this a significant elevation in your eyes of Austin Theory, or just something else and you're not reading too much into it at this point?
I think more the latter. I mean, I was wondering where Austin Theory was all night. It didn't really dawn upon me until they did the Raw Talk advertisement, and they said he was going to be there. And then I started thinking, you know, where is he? Because usually when Vince has a new act, and especially one that he likes, you see that act on just about every week. And when he wasn't on this week, it made me wonder what was going on. But I guess we should have taken a hint from that interview backstage with Pearce and Ray, where Ray was questioning whether Pearce was a man of his word. So you knew something was going on. And you knew when this was the main event, you knew that there was going to be something done. So it was like, I was already like conditioned for it. I was already ready for it. So it wasn't like this great thing. I mean, as far as Austin Theory, I mean, it, you know, puts him on Survivor Series. I mean, it's, you know, we'll get to see what he could do in a quote-unquote big match, if you call these brand versus brand matches big. So, you know, I actually, it's so crazy. I digress for a second. I actually had to look up who was on these teams because I forgot. And that's just how, like, insignificant this match is, you know. And yeah. I don't know who I was talking to recently about it, but, like, you look at the last, you know, this is like the sixth year they're doing this, and nothing has come out of these brand versus brand matches. Nothing. What's developed? Zero. You know, about the only thing that happened was Keith Lee had that big moment 2 years ago, and they, oh yeah, that's right, they released him. So anyway. Right.
You know? No, I mean, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. And I think I've said my piece on that. And I mean, I've written columns about it at pwtorch.com. Like, yeah, I mean, it's just, there's no stakes. And it's just, it's so bizarre because it's like, you're a wrestling company. Just make up some kind of stakes. If you're like, I don't know that you have to do this. You don't have to do this brand versus brand thing. But if you're going to do it, like if you decide, okay, we have to do it for whatever reason, I mean, put something behind it, because it's just, you've got these guys and then you announce the teams on social media. You don't even put those announcements on television first, no qualifiers. I mean, it's just, and then not only that, you're moving guys in and off the team on both Raw and SmackDown. I mean, it really has been, I think this build, Frank, has been more of a mess than in previous years, and that's saying something.
Oh, it's been the pits. I mean, for one thing, though, I'm glad that we're not hearing the brand versus brand, and, you know, this will determine who is the superior brand. I mean, I'm glad we're not getting that. But what has been weird is the second week in a row where Adam Pearce feels the need to strengthen the Raw team. Like, what's that all about? Nothing has been established that, you know, Raw is his baby. I mean, if it was, you know, he was running Raw and Sonya was running SmackDown, okay. You know, even that still stinks because it's brand versus brand. But at least if it was established that he was in charge of Raw, okay, I could see him wanting, quote-unquote, the best team. But I just can't. I mean, you're putting Austin Theory. Austin Theory's got the stupid selfie gimmick that I can't imagine people catching on to this. I can't imagine him, you know, catching a lot of heat for this. I mean, it's comedy. It's a mid-card act. It's the old Tyler Breeze gimmick, you know.
Yeah.
And I just don't, you know. So when you ask me if it's, I mean, it's seeing a different act, sure, you know. But, you know, I wouldn't have minded Rey Mysterio. Like, it doesn't move the needle either way because, again, we go back to the same thing. No stakes. Nothing comes out of the match. So what's the difference? So
yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of in the follow-up, too. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I look at Austin Theory, and I see, okay, he's a guy that obviously is going to, you know, attract some attention because of the look. I think he's got a personality that fits the main roster because he can kind of do a lot of things. He can do comedy. He can work in the ring a little bit. He can come off as credible because of his size. So I think he's – you know, attractive to Vince McMahon in that way, in that you can put him anywhere and he'll probably make it work. But like you said, it's kind of mid-card at this point. And I think it's a lot of what happens with him to decide whether or not this is an actual move that was, you know, something definitive, like, okay, we're going to start pushing this guy more. You kind of got to wait until Survivor Series. I mean, if he ends up running the table for Raw and is the sole survivor and really gets the match built around him and his success, okay, then I think you can look back and go, all right, well, hey, they took this moment to try to make a guy. I don't think that's the way they're going, but if they do, you know, that's an effective way, I think, of using the Survivor Series match. And like you point out Keith Lee, and it's like they had that with him. They had that moment with him, and they didn't do anything with it.
No, and listen, they've had moments. I mean, you know, we'll talk about an upcoming project where they discuss that. The announcers discussed it, but you go back to Randy Orton, you know, back in 03, 04, and 05, he was the sole survivor, and that actually – you know, built him up. He was one of the top stars, still is one of the top stars, you know, for, you know, how long it's been, 16 years. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of that, you know, I remember Roman Reigns running the table one year, or he had a bunch of eliminations. I can't remember, but you know, that kind of put him on the map. So, I mean, you do have those moments. You do have those happenings. I mean, you talk about running the table. I mean, geez, not to get into Survivor Series predictions, but Bobby Lashley has got that written all over him. I mean, the way he's mowing through, I mean, granted, it is Dominic and, you know, I mean, Ray's a step up, but still the way they're making him look, I don't think we're done with Lashley as a top act yet. So I'd look for that.
Yeah. Yep. Good point. Good point. Yeah. I definitely want to make sure we talk about him a little bit later, but before we open up the phone lines to call us here, you mentioned Adam Pearce, and I thought he's had a handful of strange appearances, not just on Raw, but SmackDown too. He's got like a kind of a heel tone to his character and kind of like a, I don't know, like a scolding father type thing going on. And he kind of talked about Brock Lesnar today, like teased him as somebody opposite like Big E as like a threat. What do you make of Adam Pearce? And then take the Brock thing too, foreshadowing Lesnar versus Big E?
I guess, yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I could have surmised out of that. I mean, the way I took it in the moment was, is he threatening to send Lesnar out if Big E decides to go out? Like, is that the plan, you know?
Right.
But, you know, I think a lot of people have talked about a Big E-Brock Lesnar match, so that could be what they're working towards. It's very possible. I don't know when they would do that. I mean, it's, you know, if they're working with Kevin Owens now, he's going to work with Rollins. I'm sure they're going to go back to Lashley at some point. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe we're heading towards that at Mania. You know, they want to bring, the heavy hitters for WrestleMania. So that's a, you know, that's a possibility as well. But yeah, very strange with Pierce. The way he spoke tonight, you know, would suggest a heel turn for him as an authority figure. And does anybody want to see that? I mean, have we not seen enough heel authority figures through the years? I mean, I think that concept is so burnt out. Could he pull it off? Sure. The question is that what you want in 2021?
Yeah, no, bingo. And I think he can pull it off. I think he can pull it off. But I just personally, I'd like him – in the role that he was in, like this kind of the even keel. Somebody said this on a show I was on, I think on Friday night, hosting for Wade for SmackDown. And someone called in talking about, you know, there's something wrong with having that even keel manager who kind of just gets the job done and kind of, you know, white knuckles through the job. And, yeah. and I thought he pulled that off really well, and it was something fresh and something new. And now yeah. it's kind of like he's turned to the dark side. Sonya Deville has already gone down that path. And so, yep. yeah, I'm with you.
And Wade and I talked about that about a year ago. We talked about Pierce just as he was starting to kind of, you know, make his way on the TV. Like, we didn't mind just what you said, like just that guy in the background, that guy that, you know, would make a decision when a decision had to be made, didn't really take any sides. I mean, that was the Jack Tunney role in the 80s, you know. And, you know, look at what William Regal was for years in NXT. You know, he didn't really, you know, he was fair, didn't take sides, didn't act heelish, just made the calls. And the thing about, you know, those acts as authority figures is that they didn't really become part of the show. When you start having heel authority figures, I worry that they become, you know, more important than the wrestlers, and you don't want that. You know, because you're just looking to see, oh, God, what's Adam Pearce going to do? Oh, God, what's Sonya Deville going to do now? And you don't want that. You want the attention to be on the wrestlers. So that's my fear with that. So we'll see what they do.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But let's kick a quick pause and set up the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the November 15th, 2021 edition of WWE Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor Zach Haydorn, filling in again for Wade tonight. Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later, running down his full analysis of the show on the Wade Keller Hotline. Go VIP at pwtorch.com/goVIP and check out that podcast that's produced daily by Wade amongst a slew of other ones. Frank, we'll get into yours a little bit later, and you know, we'll talk more about that and where people can find it. And speaking of Frank, that's the other voice you hear tonight from pwtorch.com and host of WWE Then and Now for PW Torch VIP members, Frank Pediani. Frank, always a blast to talk to you, my friend.
Oh, likewise, Zach. Thanks for having me on the show, and looking forward to talking Survivor Series, the 2021 edition, or the build to Survivor Series 2021 as we break down this latest episode of Raw. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, this will be a blast. And, we haven't gotten into it yet, but I do think that there's – you know, talking points on this show outside of the Survivor Series matches. Like, we definitely need to get into the Kevin Owens promo to start the show, Big E, how he's handling things, Becky Lynch, of course. So a lot left to get to, but we'll open up the phone lines here, 347-215-8558. If you want to get in on the conversation, 347-215-8558. It's not a long line right now, so you can go ahead and jump on in if you want to. Again, it's 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you want to hop on and chat. If you don't want to chat with us tonight, but you want to send us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to the mailbag a little bit later, and already some really good emails coming in that'll help drive the conversation here. But Frank, man, if you're ready to rock, we'll go ahead and take the first call.
Bring them on, Zach.
All right. Here we go. 410, you are up first tonight. 410, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Zach and Frank. This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore. How are you?
Keith, doing well, Reverend Keith. How are you, man? Thanks for calling. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
What's going on, buddy?
How you doing, Frank and Zach? And thanks so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Well, I know we have Survivor Series coming up on Sunday, but I want to focus on the feud between Seth and Big E. I have a feeling, Zach and Frank, that WWE is going to hotshot the belt to Seth to head into the new year. I can see where they're going with this feud, and it looks like they may do like a TV special, or it could be the first pay-per-view in January. I think it's January 1st they have something coming up. And because the way they're positioning Seth, it looks like they're guaranteeing or somewhat setting up his run at the title. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Frank, you know, they are certainly doing a couple things. I think they're hinting at, yeah, that Seth Rollins is obviously going after the title. He has his title shot. I also think they're, like, putting it in, like, this slow burn category where they don't want to heat that feud up too quickly. And I don't hate that idea. I don't hate the idea of Rollins kind of looming in the background as someone who's earned his title shot, but then Big E having to pivot to take care of business with Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns. I think it makes him look, Big E that is, look like kind of a fighting babyface champion taking on all these different challengers and battling on a lot of different fronts. I think that makes Big E look really strong. But they are, you know, leaning on Seth. And, he's the strongest heel, I think, outside of Bobby Lashley, perhaps, that Raw has right now. Where are you at on that, Frank? I mean, is Seth a smart choice to kind of pivot to as far as the champion goes, or is Big E, you know, doing fine?
I think Big E is doing fine. I hadn't thought about Seth Rollins winning the title until Reverend Keith brought it up. I don't rule it out. I'm more in the camp of Lashley getting the title back. I mean, just the way that they, you know, built him up the last couple of weeks. I mean, yes, he had to take a loss to Goldberg, but that, you know, giving him the title back might be a reward for doing that, you know, having to take the loss in Saudi Arabia. But, it's definitely possible. I mean, you know, at some point, you know, you look at the work that Rollins is doing, and at some point you want to reward that. You know, at some point you want to, give him that big win, and you could certainly have rematches with Big E, or, he can have matches with Ray, or, you know, name the babyface. But I don't know. I'd have to think a little bit more about that. Definitely possible, but I'm still leaning towards, if they're going to do a title change at some point, I'm leaning towards Lashley getting the title back.
Yeah, Reverend Keith, I don't think you can ever rule out the possibility of the title going on Seth Rollins. I mean, he's a top guy in the company. I think it's clear, you know, Vince McMahon trusts him and would like this heel act. I mean, it's like, it can be a lot of different things. It can kind of be the entertaining backstage vignette thing. It can have some credibility in the ring. So I think it's always a possibility. I think they need to stay with Big E here. I think Big E is having a heck of a run. And for the longest time, I have been advocating for him to kind of balance out kind of the goofy personality with serious Big E, because serious Big E has always had money written all over it. And he, to me, Frank, has really struck that balance nicely since becoming champion. I think that the belt and having that championship has, you know, focused that character a bit. And I think he looks like a star. I think he comes off as a star. I think he's held his own on the microphone. And I think you want to just ride that momentum and try to see how much you can get out of it. And, you know, Seth Rollins is always that safety net. I think if things either go bad with Big E or it gets stale or what have you, you can always pivot to that. But until then, I mean, Frank, I think you have to go with Big E. I think he's done enough to show that, hey, he can hold down this spot, and now you got to feed him some big opponents, whether that's Lashley again or Brock Lesnar or and Seth Rollins too. I think, you know, because they've kept them apart and they're kind of slow burning that feud, that match is going to feel big, whether it's on TV or whether it's on that, you know, January 1st pay-per-view, Frank. So I'm totally fine with them leaving the belt on Big E.
Yeah, I wasn't in any kind of hurry to take the title off of him. I think he's done a nice job. I like the work he did tonight. I like the part, especially after the match where, you know, he grabbed, I think it was Jay, where he talked about the return message for Roman. I mean, that's the Big E that I've always wanted to see, you know. I mean, I know there's going to be a little bit of goofiness. That's just his personality. Fine. I can deal with it. But if he could stay in that, you know, more serious lane and, you know, present himself the way he did tonight, then I think it's fine. And, you know, as far as Seth Rollins, he is a safety net. He is a, he is a safe choice. I almost feel like he doesn't need the belt. He's a character that doesn't need it. And he can, you know, cry foul, oh, I was cheated out of the title and this and that. And, you know, stuff like that could make him more angry and feed into his character more by not having the championship. So,
yeah,
you know, I think that works. But, you know, I mean, listen, we never know what Vince is thinking. You know, Vince could turn around in a month and say, yep, this Big E title run isn't working, you know, even if it's working for the three of us, you know.
Nope,
this isn't working, and then just pivot to Seth, and then, you know, that's that. But I don't see that. I haven't seen any evidence of that yet, but I'll certainly keep my eyes and ears perked for what happens as we move forward with Seth.
Very good. Reverend Keith, back to you. Any other topics for us tonight?
Well, I do want to say I'm in agreement with the two of you when you stated that Adam Pearce was doing a fine job before he became a heel. And, you know, it's like WWE in reverse. We're going back to the heel authority figures, and, you know, we had had enough of that. So I hope that they will pivot from that. And last but certainly not least, I wanted to say that I'm surprised that Kevin Owens, even though he supposedly is on his way out, his contract ends in January, that they're still pivoting him as a primary character on Raw. You know, I really felt that Finn needed to win more tonight, but obviously they have plans for KO. So chime in on that. And I do want to say that, Wade, if you're listening, I'm glad that your cat Pixie is doing much better. You have my prayers, brother, and I know what it's like because we have two cats here. And God bless you guys, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Keith. Really appreciate it. Great topics. Thanks very much. 347-215-8558. If you want to get in on the action here, 347-215-8558. Go ahead and press 1 to let me know that you want on the show. Frank, want to dive a little bit further into to Big E and talk a little bit about Big E versus Roman Reigns on Sunday, and not from a preview perspective, but just in terms of tonight, how he kind of framed up everything that happened in terms of the Roman Reigns and the Bloodline taking out New Day on SmackDown last week. And Big E had a lot to juggle on that promo. He had Kevin Owens, he had Seth Rollins, he had Roman Reigns. How do you think he did?
I think Big E did really well. I think that, you know, he made the match that a lot of us probably just don't care about, because, you know, champion versus champion, we've seen a million of these and nothing comes out of it. You know, he did make it feel important. He did make me want to see what happens, you know, as things unfold on Sunday. So I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to their interaction. I'm looking forward to their face-to-face. You know, when they get in the ring, he did drive interest in that match. So I think he did really well. I think he did well with Kevin Owens. He was just very simple, you know, get your treacherous lion ass out here. I mean, sometimes, you know what, if it takes two beats, give it two beats, you know,
right.
And I think he did a nice job with that. And then, you know, I mentioned the post-match already. So overall, I was, you know, I was happy about what he did. Then they had the interaction with Pierce later, and we touched on that. And maybe he could have stood up to Adam Pierce a little bit better, but at this point with WWE babyfaces, this is just how they book them. I mean, for me to wish for, you know, babyfaces to stand up to authority figures and look like strong, look like strong people, it's just fruitless, because this is just how they book everybody to be subservient to management. So that was my only nitpick about the whole thing. But overall, he got me to want to – and, you know, this match, I'll admit, I'm actually looking forward to. You know, I mean, I know Roman's going to win. I'm already resigned to that. If they give Big E enough and they make him look strong, then I'll be satisfied, you know. Overall, he got me to want to see, you know, how he would handle himself when Sunday rolls around.
I'm with you. I give WWE a lot of criticism for Survivor Series because of the lack of stakes and throwing big time matches together out of nowhere. And while, you know, Big E versus Roman Reigns is kind of out of nowhere for sure, you know, and Becky and Charlotte, we've been there and done that. For both of those champion versus champion matches, mm-hmm. they have tried to lay a foundation of some sort of storyline outside of just that. I mean, in years past, we've seen, okay, the champions are going to fight each other, and that's really it. There's no personal vendetta. Yeah. And I like that they've added that here to both of these matches. I mean, we'll talk about Charlotte and Becky here in a little bit, but Big E and Roman Reigns, I mean, you had a pretty big angle on SmackDown kind of driving that. And I like how Big E was like, hey, you know, they're going to need some more hospital beds because of what I'm going to do. I mean, I thought it was a really serious, like, you know, you look back at his run and that's one of the more serious lines that Big E has had in a promo for his entire career. And so I think opposite Reigns, that works best. I think Reigns is going to win, as you mentioned, and should, but Big E, I thought tonight was a really strong step in a champion that is going to look the part and look, you know, near equal to Roman Reigns in that ring on Sunday night.
And he feels like a champion. Like, you know, I was against the way he won it. I didn't like the Money in the Bank cash in. I mean, I feel like a babyface, as a rule of thumb for their first championship, should win it straight out in the match. Be that as it may, I think they've done a nice job with him since. You know, he had a big win over Lashley, had a win over McIntyre. So I think that they've done their best to, you know, to build that up, or build him up, I should say. And he just looks the part. Like, it feels right, you know, and that's really what it comes down to, you know, when you can see an act and you could just, you know, it's a gut feeling, and, you know, it just feels right that he's the champion right now. So, I like what he's doing, and, you know, I'm curious to see how things play out. You know, we got a long road to wrestle. Hate to say road to WrestleMania. I said it, but
your WWE commission check's in the mail. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I can take a few days off from work, right? No. Yeah. We got a little bit of a road in front of us, but I'm curious. I'm curious to see what they do with them.
Yeah. So we had Kevin Owens come out and interrupt Big E's promo. And I thought that was a really good promo from him too. And I thought, obviously, Owens is good on the microphone. We know that. But I thought it hit a lot of points that really kind of facilitated and helped kind of navigate his story, you know, for the last year plus, and how, hey, I was trying to be this good guy. The perception of me that was that I never was. And now I'm just going to lean into that. And he kind of took all the blame off of his shoulders and put it elsewhere, whether it was Big E or the fans or what have you. And I thought he did a pretty nice job articulating that. Talk about his mic work and that promo regarding his heel turn, and then we'll get into a couple other topics regarding Owens after that.
I thought it was really strong. It fit what took place last week, you know, when he attacked Big E at the end of the show. And, you know, in character, it must have been something that he was thinking about for a while. You know, I was trying to think of a comparison, like, you know, when someone does something wrong to you, you name it, whatever it is, and they come to you, you know, that's not my way, right? You know, I just made a mistake, right? And that's them basically admitting that, you know, no, that isn't you. You did that on purpose. You know, I'm trying to think of a comparison, but I can't think of one at the moment. But, you know, in character, this has got to be something that he was thinking about for a while, because if it wasn't him, he would have just told Big E, look, Seth Rollins, you know, Seth Rollins attacked Big E a couple of weeks ago. I forget what happened. It was a match between it was between Owens and Seth attacked Big E and Kevin took advantage of it, right? That was the
yep.
Yep. That was it. Okay, yeah. So he should have said, look, Seth attacked you. I took advantage of it. That's just the way it is, okay? He didn't take that approach. He took the convincing approach, which means that he knew he was not this good guy. He knew he was this bad guy. So he was just looking for an avenue for it to come out, and this was it. So I thought he laid it out, and, he just basically, hey, if everybody thinks I'm this bad guy, then you know what? I'm going to be this bad guy, which I guess that officially makes it a heel turn, right? Because that's a heel, yes. A bad guy, right?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think it is. And I think, and that's why I liked it a lot. And because it sets him up as a challenger to Big E, of course, and then you still have Seth looming as a challenger to Big E. And that's, to me, is, that's what you want for your new babyface champion, like strong heel opponents that, yeah, he's probably going to beat, especially Kevin Owens, but that are intriguing. And I think both of those matches are largely in part because of the promo work tonight. So yeah, I give that a high grade. In regards to what Reverend Keith brought up about Kevin Owens and his contract situation, rumored to be up at the end of the year, are you surprised by this push, or is it a push only to get beat? I kind of think it's more of that, where they're going to kind of elevate Kevin Owens. They're going to put him into a top slot, and then, they're going to beat him. And then whatever happens next happens next. Still not a bad way to go out if you're Kevin Owens wrestling in main events for the WWE Championship. But, what's your take on that situation, knowing kind of some of the backstage rumor?
Well, you could tell they don't want him to go. I mean, to give him a clean win. I mean, that was clean, all right? There was no shenanigans. There was nothing. That was a clean win over Finn Balor, who, in case anybody forgot, just had a Universal Championship match at Extreme Rules. I certainly didn't forget. WWE wants you to forget, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stupid rope break. But that's another story. That's my inside voice talking. I'm sorry. anyway, did that come out? Did I say that?
Dark for it.
They if they wanted him to leave, or if they didn't mind seeing him leave, they would have basically just jobbed him out. Go back a couple of years when Dean Ambrose was leaving. I mean, you could tell they didn't want him to go. You could tell they wanted him to stay. It's farewell to the Shield and goodbye and this and that and I think they want to see him stay. I guess my feeling is they're just going to kind of wait and see and continue to push him. And if he gives them an indication that he's leaving, then he'll just set up and lose.
That's pretty much
what it's going to be, I think. So, what's your gut feeling on him leaving the company? Do you think he's going to check out and go to AEW? Or do you think if WWE ponies up the money in the years, he'll stick around?
Man, I think if you're holding me to a decision, yeah, I'd say he goes to AEW, just because I think, the money's going to be pretty good there too, in all likelihood. I think the proof is in the pudding with him and WWE. Like, he's always been on the cusp of, taking that next step to being a stronger player, and they've never fully went that route. Even when he was Universal Champion, like, he was Universal Champion, but not like the show anchor, not like the guy. Yeah. And so they've never fully gotten behind him. And I think you look at what there is to do for him. It's like, man, I mean, he's wrestled everybody. I mean, I don't know that you can think of a intriguing feud for him that's left. So, is everybody – I mean, there's a lot of factors at play other than just, hey, what wrestling matches can I have? I mean, it's his health. Obviously, that's important. The dollars is important. The years, the travel, the dates. I mean, all that stuff matters. And so, I think if you're just looking at his wrestling career and what he'd be able to accomplish, I mean, yeah, there's so much more on the table for him, career-wise in AEW. But, hey – the zeros on the checks are important too, and it's a business. So, I can't rule out him staying either.
Me neither. I mean, I'm glad you brought up how they've used him, because I wanted to briefly touch on that. I mean, he's always, you know, he's always like on the cusp of being a top act, but he just never gets to that next level. It's like he's a super utility guy. I mean, he's basically a Dolph Ziggler that gets wins, you know? And even that, he doesn't get a ton of either. I mean, he lost out to Roman Reigns and, you know, named the feud. He basically lost out. But, yeah, he's just that guy that, all right, we need somebody to contend for the title. It's you. Okay, we need somebody in the Intercontinental title picture, the U.S. title picture. It's you. You know, oh, Sami Zayn's got nothing to do. Okay, let's revisit Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's that. And it's never been, and I always felt there was money in Kevin Owens as a top babyface. I did. But he just never had the look. I mean, you and I know that. You know, he's got that, yeah, you know, dad bod or whatever that that Vince doesn't like. And so he was never going to make him a top champion, you know. And even the Universal title run was, was phony, like you said, because he wasn't even supposed to have that. That was supposed to be Finn Balor. So,
right. Yeah,
that was a a second choice. But anyway, I digress. I'm with you. I think he bails out because I think there's just so much that he wants to do over there, and the chance, you know, to reunite with his buddies, the Bucks and Adam Cole, the possibilities are endless. But depends on what he wants to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because you're right. I think you can read the tea leaves a little bit and go, all right, they don't. This is, you know, maybe their effort to try to entice him to stay. We'll have to see. Let's jump to an email here, because it's kind of on the topic of the champions and Survivor Series. And, you know, we can talk more about champion versus champion matchups too. And then we'll pivot to the women's division here in a little bit as well. But Brian says, wouldn't it make more sense to have a traditional Survivor Series match with the title holders as opposed to a series of individual matches? It could look like this. On the Raw side of things, Big E as the WWE champion and captain, Damian Priest as U.S. champion, Team RKO as the tag champs, and Bobby Lashley as the captain's choice. On SmackDown, you can have Roman Reigns as the Universal champion and captain, Shinsuke Nakamura, Intercontinental champion, the Usos, and then Drew McIntyre as the captain's choice. You could also just mean similar with the women, but their teams would likely need to be more in the ballpark of captain's choice participants. Would this not be more interesting and have more storyline potential? Frank, I'll throw to you first on that.
It's excuse me. It's an interesting choice and something I've thought of. The issue is, how would they fill out the rest of the card? You know, because that's two matches, right? Let's say you put all the champions in one match, captain's choice, like you said, right? So that's two Survivor Series matches. What else do you do? I mean, you're just basically filling, you know, you could do two more Survivor Series. You could do another women's match, I guess, if you have enough people, and another men's match. But, you know, basically with all the mid-carders. So, I wouldn't be against, like, let's say the singles champions, right? Big E and Damian Priest with three other people versus Roman Reigns, Shinsuke Nakamura, and three other people. And then, like, you know, take the tag champs, let them captain a team, right? You know, RK-Bro captains a Raw team. The Usos captain their team, whether they want to add tag teams to it, whether they want to add singles guys, whatever. You know, so that's two matches. You could do the same thing with the women. I mean, if you split it up a little bit, you know, that would make it more interesting. I just feel like that would be too many of your top stars in one match, and the rest of the card would be pretty weak. So that would be my argument.
I agree with you, Frank. And, yeah, Brian, I think it's just a matter of if you put all those guys in one match, I mean, it's hard, as Frank shrewdly pointed out, to build a pay-per-view card around it. Now, that's not to say I'd like to see those two matches. I mean, I think, like, at the core, like, if you're going to do this Raw versus SmackDown stuff, that's what it should be, right? Your top guys and women on both sides teaming up, because those are, you know, quote unquote, the best, right? And so, yeah, it's kind of like WWE storytelling, hoping you forget that.
Zach, pin falls too. Who's taking pins?
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. Who's,
then,
yeah,
you
who's
got a lot, there's a lot of logistics you got to work around with that. You back yourself into a corner.
That's true, yeah, because it's not – and then, you know, Survivor Series is elimination style, so everyone's getting pinned, you know? So, yeah, so that, that's another thing. So, I mean, I think to answer the question directly, I think it would certainly have more of a storyline potential, no question. But, you know, then what else do you do on that show? So I think that's probably why they don't. But I think Frank, you're onto something there. Like, you know, instead of doing, you know, the champion versus champion matches, albeit – better this year than they have in the past. You could still do something where it's like, you know, the champions, the top champions still anchor the teams, as you mentioned. And just, you know, just so that like, cause why, if Adam Pearce wants, you know, to have the strongest Survivor Series team, he'd conceivably want Big E, the WWE champion on that team. Same thing with Roman Reigns on SmackDown. So, you know, I think you could always pivot back to that if you didn't want to one of these years have a champion versus champion match for the men's titles or the women's titles. You could, you know, have those players and those acts kind of anchor your Survivor Series teams. And then it kind of mirrors this approach that Brian came up with here, but still leaves other opportunities open for other matches of the show.
You know, and the other thing too, I mean, the good old days of like people that were feuding, right? You could build teams around people that were feuding, you know, like go to 80, go, you know, between 87 and 91. I don't remember all the matches off the top of my head, but, you know, like in the main event of 87, they built a team around Hulk Hogan. They built a team around Andre the Giant, you know, and it just look at the six man that we had tonight. You had the Usos and Seth Rollins against Big E and Riddle and Orton. Okay. Throw a couple of more guys on each side. You got a Survivor Series match. Wade and Brandon a couple of weeks ago were advocating for, you know, for a New Day versus the Usos, and throw a couple of partners on there. That's a perfect Survivor Series match, you know, because then it's now you're dealing with feuds. Here you have people that are working together that in no way, shape, or form would want to work together. I mean, now that Ray is off the team, you know, there's no weirdness with him and Seth Rollins. So maybe, you know, maybe there's, you know, there's that. But, you know, on the women's side, you know, you've got Liv teaming up with Carmella and Zelina. Why would they want to work together? That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I think if you, you know, set up matches the way we just discussed, you know, with the singles champions, finding partners, or you go back to the old way of, you know, people feuding, building teams around, you know, people that are feuding. That could be interesting. But, you know, brand versus brand, Zach.
Brand, yes. Yeah. Okay. Let's quickly give out the phone number again in case people want to jump in here. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. If you're listening and want to get on, press 1 to get up in the host queue here. We'll answer a couple of emails in a second. Let's pivot to the women's division, Frank, and talk about what happened concerning Survivor Series there. And let's start with the Becky Lynch promo. She comes out. I mean, she gets a pretty good babyface reaction during some of part like pieces of her promo, but you know they pipe in the boos, I think, for her entrance. But when she's talking, it's clear that audience is behind her. And then, you know, she kind of dresses down Charlotte Flair and talks about, and really just almost takes Flair's promo line by line. It talks about being there for her when Charlotte needed a shoulder to cry on, and then realizing that being Charlotte's friend came with strings, which is being second to Charlotte Flair, and said that, you know, that she doesn't need to be a one-note ripoff to succeed. And like, I mean, calling Flair out and just basically saying that, hey, she's going to make her confront her own personal insecurities. That was pretty intense. And I don't know how opposite a heel like Charlotte, they think that promo from Becky Lynch is going to get anything but a babyface reaction. I'm kind of at the point now, Frank, where I just don't think they care. And then we'll get into why that's a problem in a little bit. But what did you think of this promo? I thought it was pretty compelling stuff.
I thought it was excellent. All right. And I'm sure you've been reading that. I actually believe it to be true. I don't think they're actually friends anymore in real life. Like, I think they actually have stopped being friends. This felt personal. If you looked at the inflection, if you looked at Becky's face, if you looked at the way she was speaking, that felt real, you know? And I thought it was well done, you know, talking about, and then she said, you don't even like yourself anymore. Like,
right.
Well, you know, what's that, you know? I thought she really dug into, their personal issues. I don't think they're over what happened a couple of weeks ago with the title switch. I think that's actually a pretty big deal still. And I think Becky was pissed. Like, you could see even that night, you go back to that night, you could tell Becky was pissed, you know, and she was good about it. She smiled, you know, but I think that's actually a big deal. And, I think she was basically, you know, responding to Charlotte about that and just about everything that's gone on with them over the last few years. So I thought it did well. It certainly doesn't help her turn heel, you know, because like you said, that's going to get a babyface reaction. And I'm wondering if they're even really turning her heel. Like, I wonder if they're finally embracing, you know, the anti-hero character, you know, or the, you know, the tweener character, because she's still getting cheered, you know, people still like her. And, you know, when you have something like that, when you have, you know, a real life issue between two people, it just makes it so much better. Look what they did with Eddie Kingston and CM Punk over at AEW with Full Gear. I mean, how into that match was everybody? How into that feud has everybody been? It only had a 2-week build. So, yeah, I thought it was really well done just because it felt like there was some realism behind it. And when you have that realism, it just makes the program between the two wrestlers feel so much better. And you're not so much worried about who's the heel, who's the baby face. It's just these two people with this real life issue. And I think people will get into that match.
Yeah, I think so too. I think this is, you know, yes, it's champion versus champion. Yes, there's no titles on the line. But, I mean, it's pretty intriguing. And I agree. You look at Becky's facial expressions and kind of just the way she said her words tonight. There was like a little bit of extra oomph behind them, a little bit of sting. And I thought it made for just a really entertaining promo. And then, you know, Liv Morgan comes out, Frank, and all you can say is just, I don't know, poor Liv Morgan. Like, there's no way that she, her character, I don't know how you can script somebody like her character to come out and try to go toe-to-toe with Becky Lynch as a heel after Becky Lynch, you know, throws down that promo on Charlotte. I mean, it's a fool's errand, and it's not going to work. I think it's going to, you know, make Liv Morgan, it's going to expose her, I think, in a lot of ways. Like she needs for her character as this, like, try-hard, gritty, you know, baby face that's an underdog, you got to have something for her to, like, overcome. And the audience has to be behind that journey. And her opposite, Becky Lynch, it's like you're swimming upstream. She's not going to get that reaction that she needs. And it's I think it's going to – she's going to fall flat on her face, and it's not going to be her fault.
Yeah, and by the way, one thing I want to point out before I talk about Liv, the line where Becky said she slapped herself into a new stratosphere, I immediately went to SummerSlam 2018 when she attacked Charlotte. And there might have been something going on behind the scenes, you know, because during that time period, or at least in the run-up, you know, Becky was always the good hand. Becky was always the one that, you know, got close, but she never got that real push. So you wonder if there was something going on behind the scenes with Charlotte and Becky. So I just wanted to point that out. I actually love that line when she said that. Liv, I was curious going into the show what they were going to do with Liv. You look at Liv ever since she started to get this push. You go back a couple of years when they were doing the vignettes. You know, you knew that they had something in mind for her. I'm sorry to be this guy, but she just does not have it, okay? You've got to be good at something. You've got to be good at least in the ring. You've got to have some kind of presence. You've got to have some kind of ability to cut a promo, all right? And she looks like a nice girl. She looks like a nice woman. She really, you know, she does. I know she didn't have the best upbringing, You know, she didn't have, I've read her story a little bit, but she just doesn't have the chops to stand toe-to-toe with Becky. I mean, I applaud them for trying. I do. You know, they need stars, but I just don't have the confidence in her that she could get to that next level. And I mean, go back to that push a couple of years ago. It was start and stop and start and stop and stop. You know, and Becky even alluded to that in the promo a little bit tonight. So, you know, that was and that's not something that you want to do to someone that you're trying to build up. So I don't know if it's, you know, WWE trying to hedge a little bit, you know, just to say I told you so when it didn't work out. But I don't know. I just don't have the confidence that she could stand toe-to-toe, you know, and be a top act, you know, at least close to the level. I'm not saying she's going to be Becky, but at least close to that level, you know, with her and Charlotte and some of the other top acts, Bianca Belair, Sasha, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, she has a long way to go, you know. I think she has to, you know, improve by leaps and bounds to be in that position. But again, you know, being thrust in there with kind of a Becky Lynch that's toeing the babyface and heel line, that it's not going to accentuate what you know, Liv's character is. I mean, I think Liv's character is weak to begin with. And so she really needs an opponent to emphasize that character in a big way for it to work. And Becky is so muddied up right now, heel kind of framing, but babyface reaction and going up against Charlotte, who everybody wants to see her beat. It's just, it's messy for Liv. Let's jump to an email here on this topic from Zach in Texas. He says, gentlemen, at this point, Becky Lynch is the only reason I watch Raw, and thankfully, she never disappoints. As usual, she spun the promos of Straw WWE hand her into gold. Promos of Straw WWE hands her and turning them into gold. I felt bad for Liv Morgan. She had to go out there while the GOAT was holding court, having the crowd firmly on her side, and try to play the babyface. She did an admirable job, but I cringed when she said, on behalf of the WWE Universe, and got a muted reaction. Liv just isn't over enough to get the crowd even mostly on her side. I know you said the crowd should boo Becky, but they haven't been given a reason to. Being a smartass got her over, and she was in full smartass mode tonight. Why would anyone boo her, and how is Liv supposed to compete with that? Yeah, so kind of what we were talking about here, Frank. But, yeah, you reacted to that reaction. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know how they expect people to boo Becky. I mean, you mentioned the piped-in boos, you know. They – obviously wanted to be a heel if they're doing that. So I don't understand this thinking. I mean, just let people react the way they want to react and let it be. You know, Zach is talking about asking Liv to stand toe-to-toe with Becky. Listen, Liv has been around for a while, all right? She's been around for a while. If you have it, then you're able to stand toe-to-toe. You're able to go up there. Bianca was certainly able to do it in her feud, you know.
That's a good point.
And, yeah. And you know, and she was not, you know, not that she was, I mean, she was a little further along than Liv, but still, I mean, she's, you know, going opposite, you know, arguably the biggest, you know, the biggest act in the women's division for the last few years. So, I mean, she was able to do it. So, you know, we'll see. Like I said, I'd like to see her do well. I like Liv. They need acts, but she just doesn't have the presence. Maybe she goes out there a couple of more times and she gets it, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, fair point, and a good one in regards to, hey, sometimes you when you're given the spotlight, right, you gotta shine, for an ultimate cliche. But there's something to that, Frank. I think that's a good point where it's like, all right, you know, hey, you gotta you got to deliver at some point. And
years ago, she stepped right in, didn't bother her, you know.
Who's that?
Alexa Bliss didn't bother her a few years ago. I mean, you know, with Rhea Ripley, like I think Rhea Ripley's got a little bit of a raw deal so far, but you know, I give the woman credit. I mean, she got right up there. She got right in Charlotte's face. You know, how she did, we could certainly discuss, but you know, it's enough for me to feel like there is a future with her. You know, there's enough evidence to know that there's definitely better for her down the line. Not so sure with Liv.
So later in the show with the women's division, we had Nikki A.S.H. against Queen Zelina. Queen Zelina wins in pretty quick fashion. And then they run it right back, Rhea Ripley versus Carmella, and Rhea Ripley gets the win. A little bit of a longer match. And, I mean, you know, the women's Survivor Series teams and both Raw and SmackDown, Frank, are just breaking down, tearing up at the seams. Like, this is where I could go into a Survivor Series rant, because it's like, what, you know, who do you get behind in this? Like, neither team can get along. Neither team can be professional and realize, hey, they've got a job to do. They got to win. Even if there's no stakes, you know, they're professional competitors, you know, in the WWE ecosystem and the story, yet they cannot get out of their own way. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's always good to see Rhea Ripley get a strong win. Same thing with Queen Zelina. If she's going to, you know, win the Queen of the Ring tournament or the Queen's Crown tournament, whatever it was called. All right, at least give her a little juice. But that's the only silver lining I can pull to this. I thought that was kind of a mess of a segment there.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, when everybody was enthusiastic about Nikki Cross, I'm not calling her Nikki A.S.H., when everybody was enthusiastic about this gimmick, okay, I went the other way. And usually when Vince cartoons, quote unquote, somebody up, it's actually not a good sign. It means he's not into this person. And, you know, this is the only way it could possibly work. And sometimes it has worked, but usually it doesn't. All right. So I have absolutely no optimism about Nikki Cross moving forward. Rhea, she took about 6 minutes to beat Carmella. You know, fine. I mean, it's, you know, Carmella is a former champion. She's come a ways in the ring. She's not terrible, so I can live with that. But, you know, you mentioned the Survivor Series teams. We've had one caller so far, okay? This goes to show you that there's just a lack of interest. Like, I don't think there's any interest in this match. To show you what my interest is in this match, I actually have to look up who's on the team. What is it, Rhea, Liv, Carmella, Zelina, Bianca, right? That's the Raw team.
Yep.
And the women's team, I know they yanked Aaliyah for some, well, that's tied into the Naomi thing. So on the SmackDown side, it's Sasha. Who else? I forgot who was even on the SmackDown team. I know I'm putting you on the spot.
No, I mean, you could probably piece this together, right? Yes. Look it up. And I'm going to read an email here while you do. This is from John in Tennessee. He goes, I really hope they never do another Queen or King of the Ring tournament. This junk Zelina is doing made me change the channel instantly. It's just so cringe. There is no way that Vince and his top people watch any other television shows or movies by allowing that dialogue on national TV. They have zero idea of what good entertainment is anymore. In your opinion, how low do the Raw ratings have to go for Vince to make some real changes to the format of this show and overall presentation? Everyone go VIP. Rid, Zack, and Tyler did a great job with it. The AEW pay-per-view roundtable. Well, thank you very much, John. PWTorch.com/goVIP. Yeah, and yeah, that was a really fun show. Right after Full Gear went off the air, yeah, the three of us broke down the entire thing, almost 2 hours of analysis on that show. So you can check it out as a VIP member, pwtorch.com/goVIP. So Frank, before we kind of circle back on the SmackDown Women's Survivor Series team. Yeah. I mean, I'm with John on this. Especially the British accent thing. It's like, I don't even know what to say about that. It's like, why do you have to have a British accent if you're playing a Queen gimmick? Like, it makes absolutely no sense to me and really dumbs down an already bad idea. Like, the point of these tournaments, I think, was never to actually crown a queen and a king. And here we are. We've got a queen and a king, Frank, running around national TV in front of millions of people twice a week. And I just roll my eyes at it. I mean, I'm like John on this. I don't think that this is good entertainment. I don't think people watch this and go, hey, wow, I really need to check out and see what Queen Zelina is doing next week. It's really gimmicky, more so than ever. Can you have a Queen and King of the Ring tournament that works to kind of drive interest and build the next crop of stars like King of the Ring was, you know, originally constructed for? Yeah, I think you can do that, you know, and still call it the same thing. And you can even promote it and have it look the same way. But dressing up people as royalty in the most kind of stereotypical way, Frank, is just, I mean, I'm over it. I mean, I'm absolutely over it.
So before I answer that, okay, the women's team, and the fact that you didn't know it off the top of your head is the point, because that's how insignificant this match is. It's Sasha, Shayna Baszler, Shotzi, Natalya, and to be announced, okay? I'm waiting with bated breath to find out who it could be. Bayley. I don't know what Bayley's timetable was. I thought it was 9 months when she went down. I don't know if that 9 months is up yet, but, I mean, it could be Bayley if she's ready.
It could be Sonya Deville, too.
I got no interest in seeing her in the ring. I mean, she was a loser when she wrestled. I mean, at least that's the way they booked her. I mean, I thought she was capable of more. They never booked her to look good. And maybe it could be, you know, and that furthers the story with Naomi, because Naomi was the reason that Aaliyah got kicked out. So maybe, but I don't know. That's just me. That's just my opinion with Sonya. Anyway, to go back to the King of the Ring and the Queen's Crown discussion, I'm glad he brought up the accent, because it's absolutely cringeworthy. Like, what does that do for Zelina other than make her look stupid? I mean, I know I'm probably in the minority with this, but I couldn't stand it with Booker T, with King Booker. I could not stand that he spoke in that British accent, all right? That's just me. I know people liked it. I know people thought it was cool. It bothered me. So be that as it may. Yeah. Here's the question I want to ask. Can you sit down at the bar, right, with, let's say, a couple of your buddies, all right, and watch Monday Night Raw? Or can you sit down with a couple of your buddies at the bar and watch Full Gear, all right? Full Gear was full of characters that are cool, and, you know, you'd be willing to talk about people like MJF, people like Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, et cetera, et cetera. Can you sit down and watch this crap, okay, with people running around with crowns and talking in accents and Doudrop with that? I mean, at least she's not dancing anymore, thank God. But yeah, there's just so much about WWE that's not cool, all right? And it goes back years. I mean, Tyler and I just did Survivor Series 95 for Then and Now, all right? And we talked about Diesel, all right? And one of the reasons that the title run didn't work was calling him Big Daddy Cool. Can you talk to your buddies about, yeah, you got to watch this wrestler, Big Daddy Cool, because that sounds cool? No, it doesn't. That sounds dumb. That's not how people talk. It's not how people talk about others. And, oh, yeah, the WWF is running on diesel power. Like, really? Like, that's what you do? Like, that's just, yeah. And I don't think the question is how low do the ratings have to sink. I think the question is, how bad do the TV deals have to get before Vince changes his mind? Because as long as the money keeps rolling in from NBC Universal and from Fox and from Peacock and from Saudi Arabia, there is absolutely no change. Vince has absolute free reign to do whatever he wants, all right? And his vision for sports entertainment, because we, you know, it's not wrestling, is what you see. He thinks this is quote unquote good. You know what? This is a PG show. I can't say it. So it's not going to change until there's some accountability. And unfortunately, I don't see any accountability on the horizon. I'm sorry. That was a rant.
No, I mean, you're spot on. I mean, I agree with you, as I mentioned about the Queen and King stuff. And yeah, I mean, the Raw ratings, like, you know, they're down, obviously, you know, regularly. But the show itself still performs well compared to other shows on cable on Monday nights, you know, obviously NFL aside. So, you know, that's a factor. You know, that's a big factor in how they're valued, you know. So, yeah, I just don't see it in a while. Like, until something just, like you said, Frank, drastically changes in terms of the value of the product, you know, they're they're making money off it hand over fist right now, for better or worse. Let's go back to the phone lines here. We'll go to 317. 317, thanks for holding for us. State your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, Richard in Indianapolis.
Hey, Richard, how's it going? Were you at the show tonight?
Pretty good. I was at the show tonight.
Oh, great.
So it
fantastic.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, do you got a few minutes to spend with us, talking a little bit about kind of what you experienced?
Yeah, definitely. This is the first show we've had in Indianapolis for a while, so I don't know how it came across on TV, but the crowd seemed pretty hot, at least for the first couple hours. It died a painful death there the last hour or so, but the show went
really
in quality.
Was there what was the kind of the turning point, you know, where it kind of fell off the cliff? Was there one like segment or match that put everybody to sleep, or just kind of fatigue?
No, I think it was just after the Owens-Balor match, like that was pretty high energy. And then after that, it just kind of fell off the cliff there. So you could tell, you could see people leaving. You could just tell the energy kind of died after that match.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at here. I mean, you had that match and then you had a lot of promos and then you had like the tag team match and then the main event. So yeah, a lot of like downtime, I think too, in that third hour. But let's start at the beginning kind of. I mean, was the building full? I mean, you said it was a hot crowd, but was it sold out?
No, they had the upper deck completely tarped off. Everything on the everything that you can see on the TV side was pretty much full, and then the hard camera side was maybe about 3/4 full. I was sitting across from the stage, and there was, you could see like pockets of empty seats. Obviously WWE does a really good job of like hiding when they're where empty spaces, but yeah, it was, I'd say, because the arena seats for basketball around 17,000. I'd say there's maybe like 7 or 8, probably.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So, you know, at the start of the show, you had, I think, what WWE has framed as the top male acts on Raw. Big E, you had Seth Rollins referenced, and you had a Kevin Owens kind of promo. Talk about, you know, the reactions to those three. I mean, was Big E like super over as a babyface? Did Kevin Owens get the heel heat he was looking for? Talk about kind of the crowd's reaction to those three guys.
Big E got a really big pop when he came out. Big babyface pop. Kevin Owens was kind of mixed. I don't think people knew what to think of him yet. they kind of turned a little bit more after the promo, like pretty much after he said that he was going to be a bad guy, then he started to get some boos. And then Seth gets his normal reaction, just being that swarmy kind of heel that everybody hates because he's just a jerk. So, but yeah, all three of them got pretty good reactions. Like I said, the only one that was kind of mixed was Owens, just because I don't think anybody really knew what to think of him when he came out. So.
Yeah. And then what about the, you know, Survivor Series match, Big E versus Roman Reigns? I mean, were you able to get a sense in the building from the audience when Big E was talking about it, that there was a buzz for that, an interest in that? I mean, just talk about like the perception of that match in the arena as Big E, you know, kind of put a last sales pitch together for it on Sunday.
Yeah, I was super impressed with his promo on it. I don't think anybody really, it didn't, I mean, it's kind of hard. It felt like the entire show was they were trying to build a Survivor Series, but then they were also trying to build for things afterwards. I thought his promo was really good. People were really behind him afterwards, you know, especially him tying it in with everything they've done with New Day on SmackDown. It felt like he was personally involved in it and really wanted to beat up Roman Reigns. So, and there were a lot of Roman Reigns shirts there, but I think it's kind of the same kind of thing you see on SmackDown where people are wearing the merchandise to cheer the entrance because the entrance is cool. And then as soon as, you know, he shows up or the Usos show up, you know, it's instant booze. And that's what happens tonight. Like, you know, once the Usos came in to attack him, you know, it was pretty much, you know, constant boos for them and, you know, big cheers for Big E.
Interesting. Frank, go ahead with a question or two or three.
I'm curious, Rich. Zach and I were talking about the Becky Lynch entrance, and we seemed to be on the same page. There was some boos piped in. Did you sense any negativity towards Becky as she was walking in, and even, you know, during the promo and when Liv came out? I'm just curious, you know, how the crowd felt about Becky, you know, from A to Z with that whole segment.
Yeah, I was super interested on how that was going to come across on TV. There were no boos for Becky. She had a superstar pop.
Wow. Uh-huh.
It was all cheers. It was weird because I haven't been to a show, obviously, since they've started, you know, sweetening the sound. So they don't do any of that in the building. They must do it all in the truck because there were no boos for her. And everybody was cheering.
So let me
the promo.
Those people, I tell you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to jump in real fast just because, I mean, it was like, I'm going to have to go back and watch that as soon as we get off the air because I want to make sure what I'm about to say is right. But I'm going to say it anyway. I mean, and you can go back and watch this too, obviously, but I mean, it was like strong boos for that entrance. I mean, really strong boos. So to hear that it was like universal cheers is pretty, pretty eye-opening, pretty fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, if there were people booing, it was very small pockets. None of the people around me were booing. That was all added in.
No, I was going to say, if you could see my face right now with what you're telling me, with this piping in of the booze, it just really annoys the you-know-what out of me. I'm sorry, Rich, go ahead. I had to say that.
Well, and like you guys were talking about, like the promo against, you know, the promo about Charlotte, there wasn't anybody who was disagreeing with her there. I like you guys, I felt bad for Liv when she came out. I don't think an ice cube could have been colder from a reaction standpoint. Like, just there was.
Yeah.
You know, Becky's struggle on her, all of it was the truth. Like, you know, I guess that was their way of making her heelish, but there wasn't anything Becky said that wasn't true about her character. So, you know, the only kind of big moment Liv got was when she picked up the belt. I feel like that's kind of an obligatory, if anybody picks up a belt, to get a cheer. So, Becky got the biggest pop of the night by far. And so anything they were piping in was not, not present in the building.
Well, fascinating. Frank, keep going with questions. If you have any.
I'm just curious, Rich, with the closing segment, you know, pulling Mysterio from the match and putting Austin Theory in, you know, Zach and I talked about that at the outset of the show. Did people really seem to care about that? Did they seem to be like, oh, cool, you know, now Austin Theory is in, you know, or was it something else? Because I just didn't know how to take it. I was just like, okay, you know, it's a new act and they're putting them in and taking Ray out, whatever. I didn't have like a strong feeling about it. You know, it was just something that they did. Do you think people cared about that in the building, or was it just, okay, they switched them out?
No, it was pretty much, there was not a whole lot there. And like I said, part of it was the crowd was burnt out. Know why they, you know, because of the angle, I know why they put that match last. If I could go back and book the show, I would have put Owens and Balor last. But, between the crowd just being dead, I mean, 3 hours is a lot. And, you know, the fact that it was pretty much a glorified squash of Mysterio, like after that, people were just getting up, they were getting ready to leave. And then all of a sudden, Adam Pearce comes out and says Austin Theory's on the Raw team. So, Frank, to kind of your point, I don't think anybody cares about these 5-on-5 matches a whole lot. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of impact there where, you know, if it mattered, you know, and there's a bigger star, maybe it would make a difference, but, you know, it just kind of seemed like something they tacked on to the end to try and make a big deal out of it, and it just didn't come across with the crowd. So,
gotcha.
I'll jump back in here real quick. So, who got – you said Becky Lynch got the biggest pop. I'm assuming you mean babyface pop. But outside of her, though, like, was it Big E or somebody else that got the biggest crowd reaction?
It was her, Big E, and then I was really shocked about this. Randy Orton got a huge amount of reaction. Basically everything he did got big pops. When he came out, like, there was a bunch of stuff that I don't know if it was shown on TV right before they made the 3-on-3 match. He did a bunch of stuff with the crowd. Everybody was eating that up. He had the RKO out of nowhere on the Usos. That got a big pop. So I think that's how I would have ranked it. It was Becky, Big E, and Randy Orton.
Okay, interesting. And then could you tell, like, you said it was a while since they've had an event there. So what kind of crowd did it bring out? Was it a lot of, you know, families, or was it kids in the audience? Like, what was the makeup of the audience? I think it's interesting to look at that, you know, when kind of dissecting how the reactions were, you know. But who kind of made up the majority of the audience?
It was kind of mixed. There were some families there. A lot of the people that I was sitting around were probably, you know, that target demographic that everybody's looking at, you know, the 18 to 34-year-old. So, but there were some, you know, families with younger kids there as well. You know, it'll be interesting. I think, I don't know if this has happened before, but AEW is in town Wednesday. So I'll be interested to see what the reports are from there. They're going to be in a much smaller facility, but it's not often that AEW and WWE run in the same town the same week. I think that'll probably be interesting. I imagine there'll be some cross fans, but.
Last question from me here, and then I'll throw to Frank, but I'm curious, you know, we didn't talk about Bianca Belair too much, and she had the match against Tamina. She's involved, for better or worse, in this Survivor Series Brand Supremacy Madness on Sunday. But was she over with the audience in like a big star kind of way? I mean, I know she was wrestling Tamina, but what was the reaction to her?
Yeah, she got a good pop when she came out. The KOD on Tamina got a big reaction. You know, kind of those traditional, like, you know, when John Cena would do his moves on big people, you know, it was, that got a big reaction. Doudrop did get, you know, some boos when she came out and interrupted, you know, so, but yeah, even when she was backstage, because there was a little bit of that backstage promo before she came out, like, you know, there were cheers for her, not at a Becky level, but definitely like on the right track. I was actually kind of shocked too. Rhea Ripley got a lot of cheers for someone who hasn't made as much time on TV. Everybody was pretty solid behind her. Not so much behind Nikki during her match. One of the bigger boos of the night was to what you guys were talking about was Zelina when she came out with her fake accent. So I got some pretty, I don't know if it was more like go away heat or, but it got a pretty big boo once she started talking. So,
Frank, any other final questions for Rich before we let him go on his merry way?
He actually led me to my question. So I was curious what really drew the most heat. Like, I'm just going over the show and I don't really see anything that drew big heat. I mean, I guess Adam Pearce putting Austin Theory in the match would be the only thing. But you had said that, you know, pretty much got a meh reaction. Was there anything on the show, anybody that got real heat? Maybe was it Kevin Owens? That's the other thing I could think of. Who really got that heat, you know, throughout the show?
Yeah, like I said, Zelina got heat just, I think, because of the stupid queen gimmick. The Usos, when they came out and attacked Big E, they got some big heat at the beginning of the show. Seth got a little bit of heat is kind of like the normal booze that he gets. Even when Owens came back out against Balor, like, the match was so good. Like, you kind of forget sometimes about, like, how good Kevin Owens is in the ring because they don't use him probably the way it should. So that match by far was the best action of the night. In my opinion, and it got the biggest amount of reaction from the crowd as a match. So, he didn't really get the heat, I think, that they're looking for. I think people are still unsure of, you know, he didn't do anything overly, like, heelish in that match. I think he said in the promo that everybody was going to regret that he's a bad guy now. And, you know, I was expecting to kind of, like, beat up on Balor or do something really dastardly, and he just didn't do it. Like, it was just a really good, solid match, and, you know, everybody was excited about it, and there was a "this is awesome" chant. So, not a whole lot of heat there. I was kind of surprised he got the pin, or he got the win. Actually, I don't know if you guys noticed, there weren't any distraction finishes on the show other than the tag team match that ended in DQ. But everything was pretty much clean.
Oh, yeah, wow.
So,
yeah.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah. The only one, maybe in the Zelina match, I think that Carmella might have stuck a nose in, but it wasn't like a true distraction. So you're right. It's, it's good to see that.
Yeah. I do have one more question. Go ahead, Rich.
Yeah.
One other thing I noticed, too, Riddle's getting there where he's going to be over, I think,
mm-hmm.
especially like, there's the inevitable, like, Randy Orton turn on him. And I think once that happens, like, I think that'll be a big stepping stone for Riddle. You know, the problem with him is that he's a goof. Obviously you can go in the room and everybody, like, notices that. But then, you know, everything else he does is just kind of goofy and silly. So hopefully they can kind of do the same thing they've been doing with Big E, where they can, you know, make him a little bit more serious. Coming out mm-hmm. of whatever happens when RK-Bro breaks up. So, but he's on his way. Like, there was a pretty good reaction for him all night. So,
interesting. So how was just the, before we let you go here, man, how was the, like, in-person experience, like, start to finish? Did you have a fun night? Was the crowd entertained? I mean, I know you said it kind of dragged off, but was it worth the price of admission?
Yeah. I haven't been to a show in a very long time, so it was interesting to me just to kind of see. They've made a lot of changes, so, you know, I think people have talked about this before. They do a lot of stuff during the commercial breaks, kind of like they would do, like, basketball games or hockey games, where they do, like, you know, best sign or something like that. So all that was kind of enjoyable. The one part of it, like, that's not enjoyable, it's essentially a 3-hour commercial for WWE. Like, during every kind of break, they're playing some sort of, you know, advertisement for something on the network or something like that. So that part of it kind of gets monotonous. Like I said, it was very enjoyable for the first 2 hours through the Owens-Balor match. And then, you know, I think it's the same kind of fatigue I would have if I was watching it at home, where it's like, you know, can I get up and do something else in the third hour? So, It's kind of weird. Indianapolis has been a SmackDown town for quite a while. I don't remember the last time Raw was here. So, I was kind of expecting SmackDown to come back. And hopefully they announced that Raw was coming back, I guess, on Valentine's Day. So I think SmackDown would be a much more palatable event to watch, just because it's only going to be 2 hours. And, you know, the commercial breaks really – kind of kill the energy a lot of times. So,
all right. Well, Rich, thank you so much for calling in. A pleasant surprise to talk to somebody that was in the building. So really appreciate it, man. Thank you. And, have a great rest of your night.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks a lot. Love the work you guys do. So
I appreciate that, man. Thanks for the kind words and thanks for the call. Talk soon.
All right,
Frank, we'll finish up with an email here, and then get to maybe some final notes that maybe you have. But this is from Ed in High Desert, California. Good evening, Zach and Frank. I thought the Uso attack was lame but par for the course. I didn't get a chance to see SmackDown. I can't believe they wasted any of Roman's capital on that stupid crown, giving it any legitimacy. What a waste. Survivor Series has some nice matches, but the build and even the idea there's a pay-per-view this week is very underwhelming. I guess how WWE ends the Becky, Charlotte, and Big E Roman matches will dictate feelings regarding Survivor Series. Lastly, the Rey and Bobby match began at 7:30, 10:30. I guess he means...
Yeah, I guess... where is he, Arizona?
Yeah, California.
Oh,
so California. West Coast. Okay.
So 7... Yeah, sure, 7:30. Rey walked out. I actually had this in my notes. Rey walked out at... 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 his time, 9:30 your time. Look at me with my time zones.
Man.
And the match didn't start, I think, until 43. So Rey was in there a good 13 minutes. And even Jason Powell pointed out in his report, like, are they going to stretch this match to 30 minutes? You know what I mean? Like, and then they did. Yeah.
You know, you're Frank, you're stepping on Ed's email here. You know, you're just stepping right all over it.
Sorry, Ed.
You guys are both on the same page, but he goes, then they took almost 15 minutes for the match to start. By the time both wrestlers were in the ring, they went to a break, which was approximately 7:43, 10:43. It's amazing how WWE wasted that amount of airtime. Considering they felt 15 minutes was worthless, I decided to stop watching the show 15 minutes early, which leads me to this. Considering the ratings for the third hour, do you think it makes more sense for WWE to book Raw as if the main event is at the end of the second hour? Fill the third hour, obviously, with lesser stuff, but maybe it allows a smaller story to become bigger because it ends Raw. I bring that up because it felt like Kevin Owens versus Balor was the main event, while Lashley versus Mysterio wasn't. Thanks very much. Great show. Thank you, Ed. So, Frank, right in line with with the path you were going on, and I mean, WWE has clearly booked Raw that way in the past, where they're featuring the biggest segments, Lesnar appearances, stuff like that, at the top of that third hour to kind of wrap up the first 2 hours of the show. So they've done that before, and who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, you can make the argument that Kevin Owens versus Balor was the main event tonight in that position. And, you know, I think it really, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that, Frank, just because the perception of being in the main event, I think, matters. And I think if you can, if you have trouble holding an audience for 3 hours, sure, you might want to think about pivoting, but, you know, what's the real problem there? That you're not putting the right match on at the end of the second hour, or you just don't have a product that can hold the audience for 3 hours? And I think the idea is, hey, try to build a show and tell stories and have over characters that people will wait for and, you know, stay with you for till the end of that third hour. I mean, that's the goal. So you can kind of fudge it and, you know, play games with where you put things. But ultimately, like, that main event slot, I think, still has the perception of being the main event and the biggest thing. I think that'll be hard to pivot from, Frank, no matter how hard they try. And I think it's more of a look in the mirror going, okay, you know, what do we have to do to keep people interested in our product? And less so, all right, let's switch when we run main events.
Yeah. So a lot there. You know, first off, you commit to having a 3 hour show, you know, this is what you do. Okay. They're not going to put a main event segment, quote unquote, at the top of the third hour. They'll put something good at the top of the third hour, as they do at the top of the second hour. And as they do at the top of the first, you know, at the beginning of the show. But their philosophy has been, always will be, to put their, you know, show closing angle, or their big angle, let's call it that. That's going to be the close of the show. And obviously tonight, the big angle was Austin Theory, Ray being switched out for Austin Theory. That was their big angle. All right. And we talked about that. They're not going to main event with Kevin Owens and Finn Balor, because that's just not WWE's way. They're not going to main event with a match that has a clean ending and everybody just goes home. There has to be some kind of significance, you know. I mean, it could be a match where, you know, you have a title change, or, you know, the person that's going after the title at the pay-per-view wins a big match, and there's an angle afterwards. So that's just their philosophy. That's just the way it is. I would actually, and I digress for a little second, I would make the argument that Finn Balor and Kevin Owens should actually open the show, because if they open the show, you have the crowd with all this energy, and they can use that energy in the match. You put that at the top of the third hour, there's a little bit of fatigue. I mean, I would argue that the crowd was not as alive for that as they should have, you know? And that's always been Raw's thing, WWE's thing, where they start with promos. They hardly ever start with a match. Look at Dynamite. Look at Rampage. Okay, what was the last Dynamite and Rampage that started with a promo? They almost never do. They're always starting with a match. And that crowd is just, in on it all the way. So, but anyway, that's a side note. They're just, this is just the way it is, unfortunately. I mean, it's like their philosophy is, okay, we got Ray coming out. Okay, we're going to hook you because we know you want to see a Ray match. And then, here's an advertisement for Roman Reigns on Jimmy Fallon. And then here's this and here's that. And, then Bobby Lashley's entrance. And then we're going to go to commercial break again. It's like, come on, But that's just it's a philosophy that they have, that they bring out the wrestler, hook you in to want to see it, and, oh, stand by, we're going to break. And they'll just never I don't see them changing philosophies. I don't, And it's unfortunate. And you wonder how much of those ways drives away people, how much of that drives. I'd be curious to see what the ratings did this week, especially with the go-home show to Survivor Series. Did they hold the audience after that Kevin Owens-Balor match?
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, going through the notes here, they had one match and they had a lot of breaks, not dead air, but just breaks in the action. So it kind of, when you look at what they were running and then you listen to the on-site correspondent Rich, where he's like, yeah, there was a huge drop off in energy. It's like, yeah, I mean, there should have been given what they were putting on. All right, Frank, anything else then in your notes tonight that you wanted to get to that we didn't? I think we covered all the major talking points without, doing a full Survivor Series preview, which will be in multiple places on the Torch website and the Torch podcast feed all week long on the free side of things and also on the VIP side. So plenty of Survivor Series previewing coming up. But anything else in your notes for tonight specifically, Frank?
Yes. And Rich brought it up, is Matt Riddle, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This crowd wants to cheer Matt Riddle. The people want to cheer Matt Riddle. I could just tell by watching that match. And he's got something in that ring. You and I actually did a show months ago, right, where we covered WrestleMania 22, and we talked about, could there be a John Cena, Triple H type of moment in the future? And we discussed the possibility of Riddle and Roman Reigns. John Cena shook off the Doctor of Thuganomics gimmick. Not that that was a bad gimmick, but it wasn't going to be main event. He got more serious and he became a top act. All right. If you can get Riddle away from the goofiness and the stoner gimmick and you can make him a little more serious, because I think he's got it in him. I really believe that. He's already got the in-ring work. There is no questioning his in-ring. The people want to get behind this guy. You have a top act for the future, okay? And I just hope they see it that way. I worry that Vince sees him as a comedy gimmick. I'm worried that, he sees him as a stoner, okay? And he'll only get to the level that Rob Van Dam got while he was in WWE. Rob Van Dam certainly did not have a bad career by any stretch, but I think he could have done better, all right? And you look at his promos, you go back to his ECW promos, he could have spent a lot more on the mic. He was totally well-spoken, very well-spoken, okay? Mm-hmm. And could have done a lot more in WWE. And I fear that Riddle is going down the same path, and there's a lot of capital in there, okay? It's just a matter of them willing to get behind him, give him that space. Let him be a more serious character, marry that with his in-ring, and you've got a star. I don't know how you feel. It's been a few months since we talked about that and had that conversation. Has the needle moved for you? What do you think?
It has. And I think it's really well said. I think that Vince McMahon, I think we can look at Riddle two different ways. And you can look at it and go, wow, man, look at all, he's got so much talent, and man, he's doing this. And I think while that sound like analysis, the other way to look at it is, yeah, he's doing that, and he's all over Monday Night Raw. Like, clearly Vince McMahon likes this character, for better or worse, right? To put him in these different slots, he gets backstage vignettes and segments almost every single week, in addition to what he does in the ring. And so that's telling, that's telling that he's not somebody that Vince has stuck in this gimmick as a way to just, keep him somewhere. He's there, and he's driving a lot of the narrative of the show, week to week. He's also, partnered with Randy Orton, who's a legacy star in WWE and clearly somebody that Vince McMahon is behind. And I think, clearly there's going to be a match and a feud between them down the road. And I think that's really telling too, as to what his perception is there. So absolutely there's something there, because the fans, even with all the silliness and even with the scooter riding and the stoner act, with the volume turned way up, he's got the fans on his side, they're there for him. And that's important. I mean, that's just kind of an innate chemistry and relationship that you have with your audience. And it's rooted in kind of some natural charisma that I think Riddle has, but it's on WWE to kind of like to use that now. Is he going to be a one note guy, or can you build him up? When he faces Randy Orton, when that time comes, I really just hope that he's the guy to make the turn. Like, I don't want to see like a puppy dog Riddle who's upset that Randy Orton turned on him, right? Like, give him some depth, give him some range, give that character something that you can get behind, and have him kind of sniff it out first, and then really turn and have that turn mean something. So there's absolutely an avenue to making him, a top star. It's just, where does Vince McMahon see him? And I think there's a lot of evidence that points to, hey, he's high on him, but it just may be with the wrong tone. Is he a more of a Miz, or is he more of a, somebody more serious, like you said, Frank, and with the John Cena comparison. So we'll see, but it's absolutely there. No question.
There are certain people that, emote that visceral reaction. Like, you love them unconditionally. I mean, you go back to after CM Punk cut the pipe bomb promo, Daniel Bryan. And there was another guy that people were into. Too bad he sucked in the ring and ended up being a jackass, and that's Ryback. Like, people were actually genuinely behind him, but obviously that didn't work out. I see that same feeling from the crowd with Riddle. And I don't know. You need stars. And, I think you bring up a good point. The fact that he's next to Orton actually does say something, because for Orton to want to do this, it actually does mean something. So that gives me actually a little bit of positivity about the situation. So I hope that they realize what they have, and they use it to the full potential.
Yeah, me too. And it's there. But yeah, good topic. I'm glad we got to him, but we'll put a bow on it right there. Thanks to all the callers. Thanks to the emailers. Thanks to Rich, our on-site correspondent. And Frank, thanks to you for joining the show. It's always, always a blast to talk wrestling. And luckily for me, you and I get to do that another time this week for your VIP audio show, WWE Then and Now. Talk about that show, Frank, and plug everything else that you're doing for the Torch, because it's can't miss stuff on a week-to-week basis.
I really appreciate that, Zach. So yes, we will be teaming up again in a couple of days, and we will take a look back 10 years at Survivor Series 2011. So we'll get to talk about The Rock and John Cena. Speaking of John Cena and that match against Miz and R-Truth, we'll talk about CM Punk going up against Alberto Del Rio for the title. And what's really cool about the show now is that we have a really cool topic pretty much on every show with CM Punk back in the fold. We could talk about Punk's push then, and we could talk about what's going on now. So it really ties into the original idea that I had for the show. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about some of the stuff that was taking place in the months preceding, you know, just in the overall sense, just to build to that event. And, you know, if we have time, we'll kind of run through a few things with the upcoming Survivor Series, as I like to do. So, WWE then and now, you know, go VIP to listen to that show. I just had Tyler Sage, Torch contributor. We talked Survivor Series 1995 and went into great detail on that. So check that show out. And I recently shifted gears here at the Torch. I was doing the Raw and SmackDown primers for 3.5 years. I am now doing the AEW Dynamite and Rampage primers on a weekly basis. So check those out. It's a lot of fun to do. You know, just it's a lot easier to do because you know what's taking place. You know, you pretty much know the show from start to finish. So, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I've been enjoying doing it. So check that out. And, of course, give me a follow on Twitter, at Frank Pettiani. That's at Frank, Pettiani. I'm usually talking wrestling, sports, tweeting pictures of my pets or what I'm cooking. Those are usually the four topics. There's others, but those are the mains.
Fantastic. Yes, and those primers, the best primers in the business. So make sure you're checking those out at pwtorch.com, pwtorch.com/goVIP to check out WWE then and now. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Cador, and you can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show there for VIP members on the Canvas. That's a show rooted in discussing the art of wrestling. It lasts week we did a full gear preview where we just talked about the art within the build to every single match on the show. And so we kind of leave conversations like the one we just had at the door and just kind of hone in on the art of the business. We pick a current event from that week and we just talk the art of wrestling. And Frank's been on that show before. You can listen to the archives as VIP members. It's all there. pwtorch.com/goVIP. And make sure pwtorch.com is one of your stops for your daily fix on pro wrestling. We have it updated regularly with news and columns, show reports on all the big wrestling shows throughout the week, some special editorials, links to all the podcasts, free and VIP, that you can look at and pick and choose which ones you want to listen to. But it's all there for you at pwtorch.com. Frank, one more time with your social media.
Yes, sir. That is at Frank Pettiani. That's at Frank, Pettiani.
Fantastic. And you can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydornTorch. That's ZHeydorn Torch. Thanks very much for listening. For Frank, I am Zach, and we will catch you next time.